Life is hard. I did not know that when I was a child, but I know it now. Life is hard. I don't mean it is always hard or that it isn't often beautiful, only that it will be hard, that we will suffer, that there will be hard times. Some of you may be suffering now. Some may have faced hard times recently. But suffer we will. It is part of the human condition. Of course, none of you are surprised by this message. I'm not here to tell you something you don't already know. I am here to remind us of things we do know but are good to remember and revisit from time to time. The truth is, I wrote this sermon for me, the sermon that I need to hear. My hope, of course, is that it will be helpful to you as well. And I must admit, it is partly an excuse for Ken and Mayor and Looper and me to play some blues in church. It was Ken's idea, so I had to write a sermon to justify it. This sermon will have three main ideas. One, I will remind us all about the reality and inevitability of suffering and the blues. Two, I will suggest how we manage and cope with our suffering may be a central part of our spiritual lives and our life in church community. And three, I will offer a few ideas about how we might cope wisely and well with the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune that plague us all. But first, back to number one, life is hard. Unlike some of you, I was surprised when I found out. I had a pretty easy childhood. In my world, no one died, no one drank too much, no one lost their job or their home, no one got divorced. I was happy. My parents loved me, times were good, or if they weren't, I never knew. I was, in the tradition of the day, protected. But then came adolescence and adulthood, of course. Loneliness, love, heartbreak, existential angst, decline and death, divorce, sadness, depression, sickness, the usual stuff. Not to toot my own suffering horn, there's nothing special about my list. If there's anything remarkable about my own hard times, it is how common they are. How many of us face such similar trials? Now, I recognize, where's Carrie? I recognize that what I'm saying is more true for some of us than others, that there are among us those who suffer less and bounce back more easily, the more happy-go-lucky types, those who, in the words of one neuroscientist, won the cortical lottery. Perhaps all of those folks should leave now and enjoy an extended social hour. Especially since they are likely the same people who actually enjoy milling around and making small talk with strangers and acquaintances. A time that the rest of us find awkward and painful. But UU churches are full of overly self-aware introverted neurotics, so I feel pretty safe here. But I digress. Back to theme number one. Life can be hard. The hard times come, the hard times go, but they will come again. We will face loss, and we will feel despair and emptiness. I find comfort in the old words from Ecclesiastes. Meaningless, meaningless, all is meaningless. What a heavy burden God has laid on men. Now there was someone who clearly had grown weary of his burdens, who had faced his own despair, someone in the midst of his suffering, and an ancient king, no less. It is gratifying to know that existential malaise wasn't created by the spoiled children of the 20th century, but has been around for at least 3,000 years. I find connection to distant strangers, to those who've gone before, in reading these ancient words. They were just like us. I also find it gratifying that someone was wise enough to include this heartfelt rant in the Bible. Perhaps it slipped through. Or perhaps they were onto something. The Jews knew then, as they know now, that we will face hard times, and that our hard times are in some sense sacred and part of our religious impulse. The Buddha knew it too. Life is suffering, said the Buddha over 2,500 years ago. It is the first noble truth of Buddhism. Not that life is all suffering or not a good thing, but that something is awry in the human experience. Pain, sickness, fear of our inevitable decline and death, the tyranny of our desires and separation from things we love will inevitably cause us to suffer. And all that suffering will call us to spiritual practice. So life is hard. The ancient Jews knew it. The Buddhists know it. And lastly, the African Americans who gave us the blues knew it too, in their own inimical way. As the great Muddy Waters put it, and the great Looper, "Lord, I'm troubled. I've y'all word in mind. I'm never being satisfied, and I just can't keep from crying." Many of us feel ashamed by our hard times or our hard feelings, as if we have failed when things go wrong. But I have come to see it otherwise, that while we may play some role in our own suffering, much of it is merely a manifestation of the realities of the human condition. As a psychologist who has been following advances in neuroscience for a couple decades now, I have grown sympathetic with the notion that much of our suffering is embedded in the evolved nature of our brains, that we evolved not to be happy and content. Those folks were eaten by ancient predators or killed or killed by more fearful and aggressive humanoids. We evolved mostly to procreate and to survive. We evolved to be motivated mostly by four mechanisms, famously called the four Fs: feeding, fighting, fleeing, and fornicating. Sadly, being loving, content, happy, and filled with inner harmony may not be our most natural inclination. Rather, being hypervigilant, aggressive, and anxious was probably more adaptive for survival. Those behaviors helped us to survive and pass on our genes. So, both the reality of the human condition, pain, sickness, loss, death, and our evolved nature have conspired against us. I suspect that many of you would agree with me, and that a substantial part of your life has been a struggle of one kind or another. Then, what explains what I hear so often, both out in the world and here at church, when we ask our knee-jerk question, "How are you?" And then we mostly hear the knee-jerk response, "Great, great, couldn't be better, amazing, everyone's good." Are we just being polite? Saying what we think others want to hear? Are we lying? Trying to present ourselves as if we've got it all together? Are we ashamed? Ashamed of the other side of our experience, our fears and our failures? We've all had some. Is this what Brené Brown has built an entire career on? Identifying that we all have shame that we hide, and that daring to be vulnerable is only for the brave among us. I'll say a bit more about that later, unless I run out of time. So, what should we say when someone asks, "How are you?" Well, who the hell am I to tell you what to say? But I can tell you my favorite answer, and a few of you know this one as I've imposed it on you. How many of you heard my answer to this one? A couple of you have, yeah. Sorry, Al. How am I? How am I really? Ibit frotte. What did he say? Ibit frotte. Sounds kind of Norwegian, doesn't it? Ibit frotte. But it's not. Actually, it's an acronym. There it is. I went to a lot of trouble making this poster. I have been experiencing the full range of the human experience. Yep. I've been up. I've been down. I've been at peace. I've been anxious. I've been excited. I've been bored. I've been cared for. I've been neglected. I've been impatient. I've been kind. You get the idea. Ibit frotte. I know it's kind of unwieldy, and it requires an explanation, so I don't think it's going to catch on. But what if it did? What if we all routinely expressed the full range of our experiences, or at least more often, or with a few more people? Try saying it. Ibit frotte. I knew you could. What were we talking about? Oh yeah, suffering. The truth and inevitability of suffering, and the wisdom of getting to know that truth, and of spending some time in the darkness is a proper and critical piece of the religious life. Not to wallow in the darkness, not to let it consume us, but to linger there for a while, to know the truth of it, to let it teach us its lessons, There is no point in wallowing. This sermon is not an invitation to pessimism or despair. It is self-destructive to stay in the dark for too long. But suffering is one of life's truths. There will be stones in our pathway, and we're all going to die. That didn't get a laugh? I thought that'd get a laugh. Okay, good, thanks. Okay, Greg, we get the point. We're suffering now. We're in the darkness. You dragged us down here. Now what? You'd better have some answers. Well, I don't have any answers. I do have a few ideas. The first half of the sermon implies one very basic strategy: to carry a different mindset about pain and suffering, to realize that it is not an anomaly or a mistake. It's just life. In the popular vernacular, shit happens. Stop fighting it. Don't blame yourself, or anyone else for that matter. This is a message we have all heard many times. It's in the popular culture now. Stop trying to make your life what you wish it was and let it be what it is. Which is why I spent the first half of this sermon trying to normalize suffering. I'm at peace with my imperfections. So my printer would, I wanted to get it to do one page at a time. It was doing front to back, and I couldn't get it to, but I'm digressing again. So my job up here is to try to normalize suffering. Entropy, after all, is the second law of thermodynamics. Things fall apart. So we need to get used to it and maybe even make peace with it. But more specifically, how do we make peace with it to learn to live with it wisely and well? When I'm at bars, they always have a little holder in my thing. By now, we have all heard about mindfulness and meditation, which are two evidence-based strategies to deal with our suffering. And like healthy eating, we'd be foolish not to give these a try. But I want to consider three other ideas that I think are useful for dealing with the hard times. And I will say a bit about each, although I may abbreviate it as we're getting close here. Don't stay for the last song. Just go out to the social hour. We just want to jam. It's your choice. Number one, we all need faith. Faith. Now, there's a strange word for Unitarians. Most people use the word faith to speak of things we can't get our arms around. Faith that all things happen for a reason. Faith that one's religion is true. Faith that God answers prayers. Faith that things will work out for the best. Faith that we will go to heaven. Most of us, including me, have trouble with that kind of faith. We find it intellectually insulting or contrary to our experience. Faith to many in this room is a troublesome, outdated concept. But let's take a different look. I speak not of faith as belief in implausible things, but faith is a hopeful, positive attitude towards life, as a leap into commitments to things beyond the knowable. When we say we believe in the inherent goodness of humankind, do we really have evidence for this overwhelming goodness? No problem, Aaron. When we say we believe in the democratic process, do we really have evidence that democracy will ultimately prevail? When we say we believe in love, do we really have evidence that love will conquer hate? Or do we, like others, take a leap of faith? So we too are a people of faith. We too take leaps of faith. While it may be scientifically and philosophically defensible to critique the idea of faith, one might ask whether it is psychologically wise to turn our backs on it completely. Don't we all need something to believe in, something in which to place some faith? I'll skip the part where I critique science. Do we really think that four-dimensional creatures can discover objective truth about an 11 or 13-dimensional world? But don't we need to live in it nonetheless? So even when science gives us good answers, science doesn't tell us what to value or what to live for. Some things take faith. It takes faith to bring children into this world, to marry, to vote, to give to charity, to believe in love, to care for the environment, or think about the future. So we are people of faith. Which brings us to the question, how do we develop such a faith? And of course, the short answer is, I have no clue how to create this kind of faith. I'm not here, I'm here to share my quandaries, not to solve all your problems. But perhaps we could begin just by recognizing that we too are people who have a need for faith, that we need something to believe in, something that will guide us and sustain us in good times and bad. Which brings me to idea number two, which just happens to be community. All this suffering is too much to face alone. We need each other, or if not each other, then some others. I suspect that our hard times are one of the things that bring us here and one of the things that bind us together. We come to this place for many things, but one is to find community in and through hard times, sometimes sharing our hard times, sometimes sitting in silence, but in the presence of others during our hard times, sometimes listening to others' hard times. This is why I suspect for so many of us, the joys and concerns part of the service is among our favorites. To be together in our common fate, especially in our common losses and suffering. As the therapeutic lingo says it, feelings shared are feelings diminished. It just makes us feel better. I came to this church 20 years and two locations ago when it was in Delafield. I sat as a stranger soon after my mother had died, soon after my divorce, soon after my 8-year-old daughter had been in a serious car accident, soon after it seemed that much of my world had collapsed, seeking solace, seeking friendship, seeking hope. I was tempted at this point in the sermon to invite others to share stories of hard times that we might find comfort and community in telling our stories, but I grew anxious that we would either face an awkward silence or a barrage of tragedies that would leave us feeling battered and sitting here long past lunchtime. So let me take the liberty of speaking for you. I know some in this church who have lost their jobs. I know many in this church who have lost loved ones. Others who have lost their way. Some struggle with children, some with spouses, some with chronic illness, some with money, many with anxiety and depression. This may be the time to remind us of Brené Brown's challenge to admit that we are often ashamed of our struggles, but that we need to be willing to be vulnerable and courageous enough to share them, not with everyone or always, but perhaps more than many of us do. And to remember that in doing so, we might cultivate the kind of intimacy and care that we seek. I notice that when someone else shares their pain or struggle with me, that it opens up a softer part of my heart. The parts of me where empathy and compassion reside, parts of me that I wish to see grow in my remaining years. By further example, let me say that I'm more than a bit embarrassed to stand up here and talk about all of this. That I'm ashamed to admit that I'm often not very compassionate, that my life has fallen apart on several occasions, that I'm still nervous speaking or singing in public. But I do it anyway. So there's that. Perhaps I'm taking steps towards doing my part. So what I'm getting at is the idea that in order for our community to be of deeper value to each of us, that we may need to be more open, more vulnerable, and more courageous ourselves, that this might be part of the price we pay to create a truly beloved community. How else do we create this kind of community? Of course, I don't know. But I suspect we can't do it just by sitting in pews and listening to others speak. And I suspect that if we thought about it and were intentional in trying to create it, that we might design our programs and activities somewhat differently. This is one of the reasons I'm excited about next week's service, thanks to Carrie Duma, where we are given the opportunity to engage in service together. Certainly, we hope that our work will be of benefit to others, but I'm guessing another benefit will be in getting to know some of each other in a different, perhaps more meaningful way. I'm skipping some parts. So, bottom line is I'm inviting us all into a conversation. I don't know the best way to create that kind of community, but I have a community, but I am inviting us all into a conversation about what it might take to create that kind of a community. In the meantime, and lastly, strategy number three, the blues. Buddy Guy said it best. Funny thing about the blues, you play them because you got them, but when you play them, you lose them. That is, an artistic and emotional dive into life's darkness can be therapeutic. Of course, this can be through an array of art forms, literature, theater, visual arts, even country music, just to name a few. Here, the blues is best understood as a metaphor for the array of musical and artistic modalities that take us into and through the darkness. As someone who's been singing songs at campfires, clubs, bars, beer gardens, and churches for the last 45 years, let me tell you something I've noticed. People love sad songs. They don't like being sad, but they love sad songs. Perhaps that's because these songs say out loud things we can't or won't say. Perhaps it's because they create a fellowship in misery. Perhaps it's because they recognize things in us that we need to be known. And I've noticed that I'm allowed and encouraged to say things in song that would be considered inappropriate in everyday conversation. These art forms give us permission and opportunity to go places where we might not otherwise be allowed to go. And they help us heal. So allow me one last attempt to tie all this chaotic rambling together. Perhaps it will make more sense if I just say a bit more about the music we call the blues. Many folks have misunderstood the blues. They think the blues are all about hardships of life or about being sad. But that is to miss the main point, I think. The blues are, first and foremost, about standing up to hard times, acknowledging that they are real, that bad things happen, sure, but proclaiming nonetheless that we're not going to let them keep us down, that even in hard times we're going to sing and dance and carry on. We're going to keep believing. We're going to have faith in this life we've been given. The last song we played, which is called Trouble in Mind, was written by a jazz pianist named Richard Jones in the 1920s, but the song has become a blues classic. It has been covered by everyone from Lightnin' Hopkins to Janis Joplin to Brownie McGee to Jerry Lee Lewis to Dinah Washington, Nina Simone, and Johnny Cash, to name just a few. So obviously it has some staying power. Perhaps there's something universal and powerful in it. In the earliest version, the writer of the song contemplates suicide, writing, "Sometimes I feel like living, sometimes I feel like dying. I'm gonna lay my head on some lonesome railroad line, let the 219 train come and ease my troubled mind." But then later in the song, he went on to write, "Trouble in mind, I'm blue, but I won't be blue always. The sun's gonna shine on my back door someday." It is a song about hard times, but it's also about resilience and hope. The sun's gonna shine on my back door someday. So blues is about suffering, but it is also about faith. Faith that love and life will prevail. Or at least this thesis gives me an excuse to rant for 25 minutes and then play one more blues song in church, now that you know the real meaning of the blues, which proclaim, "My week was awful, but I will have fun on Friday night. That woman left me, but I will find another. I'm sick, but I will get well. I lost my faith, but I will find another. I am alone, but I will create community. The sun's going to shine on my back door someday." So this sermon is really just an invitation to search for something to believe in, to risk being vulnerable, to share more bravely, to work together to build relationship and community, to be of service to and with each other. So here's hoping we all find these things, both here at church and in the wider world. But in the meantime, especially when we have a hard time finding something to believe in or our place in the world, we can carry on and sing and dance and eat and drink and hope and laugh and love and maybe even listen to an old spiritual by the choir. Then a few words of hope and finally one more blues. Amen. Woo-hoo!